I hate the refs, I hate the injuries, I hate the lack of running, and I hate the Rams. Suck it, Seattle! I hate the refs, I hate the injuries, I hate the lack of running, and I hate the Rams. Suck it, Seattle! I hate the refs.
I'm denied worldwide! The Los Angeles Rams! It doesn't get any better than this! Let's go Rams!
Good evening. I guess that's what I get for trying to be fancy by adding an extra audio and forgetting to uncheck loop. Good evening. I'm John and welcome to another edition of the LA Rams UK podcast, episode 104, the Kai Runs Sweep. And tonight I am joined as always by Andy. Andy, how's it going, mate?
I'm all right. Thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm not bad.
To start off.
That's what I get for trying to be fancy. You know, for anyone who's watching this stream tonight, you'll see there's fancy. You can actually see our logo. Hold on, 8 point. It's up there. You can see the nice background there, which is the greatest show of stuff.
I don't know why I'm pointing. I've not even got a video on, so it's
no, mate. No, you're just the voice inside our head, Andy. That's who you are, mate. But good to speak to you as always, Andy. And tonight, joining us for the first time is Stephen. Stephen, how are you doing, mate? Thank you very much for joining us.
No problem, guys. Pleasure to be with you.
No problem. So Stephen joins us from the LA Rams UK community. We put an open invitation out for anyone wanting to join along the podcast, and he answered the call. So Stephen, if you give us a wee rundown, how long have you been a Rams fan, and how did you get into American football / the Rams became your team?
Okay, I'll show my age here, but I watched the LA Rams watching Channel 4 back in the day when it first showed football, and just fancied the strips, thought they were quite cool. And I thought I'll become a Rams fan, so here we go. So I saw Eric Dickerson wearing the pads, the specs, all that sort of nonsense, and thought, yes, that's my team. So that's how I became a Rams fan. So yeah, here we go.
Not bad. And in case you can't tell, folks, we've got fellow Scott in the podcast, and it's the 30th of November, which is also St. Andrew's Day. So we've got two Scots plus an Andrew on the podcast. So it's very apt how we've organised who's on the podcast tonight, guys. But so firstly, just to update you guys, so if anyone's tuning in, we are now live on YouTube, hopefully Twitter and Facebook, and hopefully now going forward, you guys will be able to tune into the podcast live on all of our social media platforms. And as always, after the podcast has been recorded, it'll become available on our audio channels. And just checking our Twitter account, it looks like we are indeed live. Oh, okay, fantastic. At least I looked something right, Andy.
Yeah, you did one thing right. I did see the notification myself on my phone.
Oh, there we are. I can see myself right. I don't want to sit and watch myself on the screen. So yeah, so we're here, folks, to catch up on the week 11 win over the Seahawks, or the Sweephawks, as we're calling them now, because we've beat them twice this year, and also the week 12 win over the Cardinals. So we'll start with week 11. Rams somehow coming back to win 17-16 against the Sweephawks. I'm not calling them that. And I don't want to call them by the name I usually call, because I'm trying to cut down on the amount of swearing. So Andy, firstly, I'll come to you, mate. What was your thoughts on these Sweephawks game?
Very lucky to win it, but you know, it's always nice to sweep your divisional rivals, but it was not a pretty game by any stretch of the imagination. But sometimes you're gonna have games that are just gonna be like that, but we managed to grind out the win and rode our luck by the missed field goal at the end that would have, you know, lost us the game.
Yep. Stephen, what was your thoughts on the game?
Yeah. As always, a slow first half, which is not normal. Kendrick's penalties, which killed us a lot. Jason Myers, the missed field goals, and I think Rippon would have got this ball.
No.
Because he signed.
Yeah, well, I guess Rippon signed his Sweephawks didn't actually do them the favours they were hoping to end. It was, for me, it was a very, very, very tough game to watch, to the point I'll admit this. My wife actually had to wake me up twice, and that's no word of a lie. I literally dozed off twice during the game. It was literally that tough to watch. That being said, I mean, there was some positives to take from the game that we did, you know, come back to win it. You know, considering that we held them, you know, just to, I guess, like, the one touchdown or whatever, like, it's fine. But, you know, that missed field goal, like, I don't know if you guys seen any clips online and, like, some of the bars in, like, Seattle of them, like, the disbelief, you know, that they missed the game-winning kick when, you know, their kicker's quite solid, isn't he, Andy?
Yeah, he's a fairly solid kicker. He's, you know, pretty much one of those automatic kickers. He's, you know, going to make it. You know, as soon as they got to the field, I thought, that's it, game over. He's going to kick this and win it. But, you know, like I say, it was just that luck for the game that we just got that lucky bounce. You know, if we tried it again another 10 times, he'd probably make that field goal. But, you know, it was just one of them games where we finally came alive in the fourth quarter and just about ground out the win, but it wasn't pretty. Yeah,
it was grim to watch.
It was, yeah.
It's like you said, Dan, it's one of those games that we kind of came out of the end thinking, how the hell did we win that? And there is one play that I believe that you can single out as being the turning point in the game, and that is the attempted murder of Geno Smith by Aaron Donald.
That one that they're all whinging about, saying it was a foul, he shouldn't have been allowed, he should have been disqualified, blah, de, blah, de, blah. No, it was perfectly legit.
So with that play we're talking about, it took Smith out of the game, brought Drew Locke in at quarterback, who did absolutely nothing for them. They got nothing going in offense whatsoever, and it gave us the space and the freedom to come back into the game. Unfortunately, as you'd hoped, Andy, we didn't get to hear Geno Smith, you know, screaming, "Oh my God," at Donald running down. But I mean, he's lucky to get away with his life, isn't he?
I think that time he didn't even have a chance to see him. It was to scream, "Oh my God!" It was a case of he was there before he even knew what happened.
Yep. So obviously, as you touched upon, guys, like the last drive from the Seahawks was basically, it was, to be quite frank, squeaky bum time for us, because like in the drives previously of that, so just looking at the kind of summary, in the fourth quarter alone, they went four and out, and then 8 plays for 38 yards to set up the field goal. Stephen, in terms of the offense, how did you feel that Matthew Stafford's performance was in this game?
Well, he threw all right for a change. Wasn't that many pick six? So he just carried on as he's doing. Chucked it away. Did what he has to do.
So he was 17 for 31, 190 yards, 1 TD, 1 INT. Andy, what was your thoughts on Stafford's performance in this game?
It was just average Stafford. He sort of managed to get the thing going, but he did at times. There were some balls he was sort of going, hang on, what's he looking at? What's he throwing at? You know, but at the end of the day, he came up clutch when we needed it and got us the win. And, you know, that's what he's famous for. But, you know, it was, like I say, an average Stafford performance. I think it's what we've come to expect from him now, where there's going to be some throws where you're thinking, oh, my God, what a fantastic, you know, throws. And, you know, and then there's other throws where you're just going to be scratching your head going, what? I think that's just what we're getting from Stafford these days.
Yeah. In terms of the throwing side of it, if we just go look down quickly through the receiving side of it, and it's going to bring us on to a topic we're going to revisit from a couple of weeks ago. So looking at his targets, Puka was 5 for 70 with a touchdown. Darrell Henderson, 4 for 28. DeMarcus Robinson, 2 for 24. Austin Trammell, 3 for 23. Tutu Atwell, 1 for 17. Higbee, 1 for 17. Cup, 1 for 11. Of one target. And this brings me up to a point we raised a few weeks ago. And after the Seahawks game, I've seen a few people question it on Twitter. A couple of guys in the Discord server done it as well. And with Stephen on tonight, I'd be interested to get his opinion as well. So the common question that came up from the Seahawks game online was, Is our offense being held back when Cup is on the field, given we played better and came back to win when he got hurt and came off?
Yeah.
Stephen, I'll ask you first what your opinion is, because I kind of know half of Andy's.
Yeah. Okay. I think when Cup was playing fine, it was good. Stafford tagging it all the time, but now we've got Nuka Pagua. He's getting missed out now. When Cup's on the field, we seem to be mistargeting him, so we should chase him more.
Okay. And
Coop's obviously injured, and we're just using him as a decoy now. Looks like that anyway.
Well, I actually had a discussion. It was actually following this week's game, and the person I was speaking to online on Twitter about it, that was seemed to be his opinion on it, is that Don't necessarily look at it in terms of Cup isn't doing well. He's been essentially, to quote, you know, football terminology, he's been marked out of the game. He's been used as a decoy like that. Andy, bringing over to you, mate. Like, you raised this a few weeks back, yourself, questioning about Cup and his involvement. How do you feel about Cup on the offense following the Seattle game?
To be brutally honest, I have, like I said to you, I've got two things. Is one, he's not fully fit and healthy, which is why he's looking so out of sorts, and he's not, you know, he seems to be that step slower, and you know, everything, he's dropping passes, et cetera, which is very uncommon for him. The other thing I've got is I feel when Cup's not on the field, Stafford has to be a proper quarterback, i.e. he has to go through his reads. He's got to look, so he's got to go 1, 2, 3, who's open, I'm throwing. When Cup's on the field, Stafford's always, no matter what, I think what the play is, it's where's Cup? He's always instantly looking for Cup. So I think when Cup's not on the field, it makes Stafford play better, because he's actually got to do his job, as in, like, right, Nakua's locked up, Higby's locked up, oh, Atwell's open, I'm launching it to Atwell, or, you know, a combination of that. And I do feel when Cup's not there, Stafford is a better quarterback because he's not looking straight away to him.
Yeah. I think if you see the fact that he only targeted Cup once on all the snaps, you know, that Cup was on the field, compared to 7 for Nakua, 7 for Henderson, 2 for Robinson, 6 for Trammell, 3 for Atwell, 3 for Higby, only 1 for Cup. That's 2 years ago. Like, if we were in that 2021 season and someone said to you that we only target Cup once in the game, given how he's playing, Stephen, you'd think we were going off our nuts for not even looking to pass him. But I think it's like, do you agree with what Andy's saying about it's a case of either he's been marked out of game, he's not fully fit, or, you know, when he's not in the field, Stafford's actually having to, you know, not saying he's not doing what he's supposed to do, but you know what I mean? That he's actually having to go through and actually do what every quarterback will do. Instead of just focus on, you know, plan A, he's actually having to read the defence.
He's going through his reads. So if Cup's not there, he's going through his reads. He's got Atwell, he's got Nakua. So he's got to go for it. So, yeah, it's a big change in the offence.
Yeah. It's just that it's kind of a weird one, right? Because we said this, me and Andy said this a few weeks ago, that we're not trying to say that we don't want Cup out there. It's just bizarre to see the way the offense is playing with Cup out there. And Andy said it, I think Cup has got something lingering there that we don't know about. And, you know, we know fine well how the team treat injuries, especially to, you know, the kind of elite players on the roster. But it's a tough one because we've seen them. I think if we didn't have Puk out there, it would be a hell of a lot worse, guys, wouldn't it?
At least we've got a decent running game now.
We will come on to that. So any final thoughts in the Seattle game, guys, before we then move on to it, and then we'll talk about the running game?
I don't think so. It's just one of them games, I think, where we got the win, but it wasn't pretty. But, you know, happy.
A win's a win.
Yeah, a win's a win at the end of the day. And that was, we've had a lot of luck go against us this season. That was our game for the luck to swing our direction, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely. So that moves us on to the current week, where we travelled out to SoFi East, as it was being dubbed, because quite a large contingent of the Ramilly travelled out to Arizona. Including a few guys I'd seen from the UK that travelled out and made it to the game. They tagged us in some of their tweets. It's Tony and Catherine Deef that were out there, and I hope they had a great time. We travelled out to Arizona to take on the Cardinals, where we emerged 37-14 winners against Cardinals, moving on to 5-6. Now, first of all, I know it's the Cardinals. No, they're not doing well. Can only beat who's in front of you. Is all I'm going to say first before I talk about anything else. Stephen, thoughts on the Cardinals win, first of all?
Well, this is just the Kyren Williams show.
Well,
back.
That's it.
There's not much to say about that. He just ran all over them.
Literally. Andy?
Yeah, it was a much better performance. Clearly, as we said, you know, having a good running game going helped the rest of the offense, you know, get going. And, you know, we had a couple of big performances as well. Obviously, Kobe Turner stepped up and showed what he could do this week. You know, he's slowly turning into a mini Aaron Donald, you know. So, you know, and yeah, once Arizona looked good for the first drive. And then after that first drive, it seemed to be we figured things out, how to stop them. And we just thumped the living daylights out of them for the rest of the game. And to be honest, we dominated the trenches on both sides, on the offense and the defense. We just dominated on both sides of that side of the ball. And we just completely, you know, got rid of them. And it was only, you know, garbage time touchdowns that sort of, you know, it was nothing throughout the rest of the game.
Well, that's that. I don't feel like the 14 points that the Cardinals scored reflect, you know, how well we did to basically keep them at bay. Like you said, it was 8-7 after the first, and you know, as a garbage touchdown, like they got nothing from us afterwards. Which we'll break it down a bit more, I guess. But basically, as you said, both sides of the ball, great performance. Start with Stafford, you know, 25 for 33, 229 yards, 4 touchdowns, which I believe moves him to 11th in the all-time passing touchdowns on, I had the number written down, I should have it, yep, there it's there, got it. 346 passing touchdowns, he's now 20 behind Eli Manning on the list now. Stephen, Matthew Stafford, much better performance from him in this game, wasn't it?
Yes, aye. Perfect play. And I think as sent Kobe Turner 2 sacks. Perfect. And Kendrick, the second career interception.
Yep.
From his first one the week before, although he gives away a lot of penalties. We could forgive him that.
Kobe Turner was definitely a highlight for the defense. There was one, I think it was one of his sacks in particular, was described as basically Aaron Donald-esque. He'd done the classic club move from Donald. You can tell this guy is working closely with Aaron Donald, can't you, Andy?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You know, again, much like we've highlighted Byron Young a few times, he's got better as the season's going on. Kobe Turner's the same. He's getting better and better as the season goes on. And, you know, for a smaller guy as well, you worry about him in the run game. But even in the run game, he plays a lot bigger than, much like Aaron does, he plays a lot bigger than his size and is actually really effective at running, you know, at the running game and stopping them dead. So, you know, but yeah, he's definitely, you know, the perfect guy, to be honest, to be learning alongside, to watch day in, day out in training. And, you know, give a shout out as well to Mr. Irrelevant, you know, Deshaun Johnson, managing to get his first career sack, which was, you know, quite nice to see. And, you know, hopefully that'll be a little bit of a boost maybe for him as well, moving forward. I'm not saying he's ever going to be, you know, number one pass rusher or anything, but if he's capable as a rotational player to come in and, you know, spell guys like Byron Young and get, you know, some production. That's what you want out of, you know, Mr. Irrelevant. You can't ask for anything better.
I think for me that it's probably the first time I've actually heard has they mentioned and actually noticed any kind of impact he's had for him. So, you know, credit where it's due there.
I think he's been injured for a lot of the season. I think he came out of camp with carrying a few injuries and, you know, unfortunately as well, I don't think we've really been in games where we've managed to, you know, in the fourth quarter sort of rest some of our starters because we've been in tight games pretty much all the way through to the end. We've not had that. This was a perfect game for the likes of him to step in and, you know, maybe just show what he can do.
Yeah.
If he can carry on like that, then let's give him some more games.
It was just as you touched upon it there, Andy. It was good to get some of our kind of, you know, lower string guys in and get them some reps and whatnot. We got to see, we didn't get to see much of him. We got what, three plays out of him, you know, Carson Wentz, a couple of handoffs, well, two handoffs on the pitch. He got but we had the likes of rookie Davis Allen, tight end, picked up a reception as well. But before we come to, you know, the man of the hour, Kyren Williams, two people want to kind of highlight one positive, one negative. First of all, we'll go with the negative first. We're back here again. Lukas Havrisik, 1-for-2 in the field goals, 4-for-5 in the extra points. Now, I know we won the game, but I'll be back to this with the kicker. The inconsistency with kicker being a worry, Stephen. Or do you think, does it matter if the Cardinals we won?
No, it's worrying. The amount of field goals, point afters he's missing is a worry. We need somebody's thought there.
Is there anyone else out there in particular that you think should have been brought in or should be looked at going forward if we did get to a point where we move on?
I don't know. Can we get Greg the leg back?
I think to be honest, I'd prefer Matt Gay to come back than Greg the leg.
Yeah. No, it's kicking. It's shocking.
Andy, what are you thinking, mate?
Yeah, I think, you know, those clutch moments in a game, you know, in a close game would potentially have cost us a game. In terms of someone I'd like to bring in, Goggles, Rodrigo Blankenship still sat there on, you know, in free agencies, always someone I've screamed at quite a few times I'd like us to look at. Because, you know, he had a bad time of it in Indianapolis. But I do think, much like Matt Gay, if we give him a chance to come in, settle and get used to things and get going, he could be one of those, much like Matt Gay was for us, he could be that diamond in the rough that we just find out on the street.
Yeah, I was certainly surprised that we didn't look at Goggles, to be honest with you. It was a bit of a left field seeing Havrisik come in when, you know, like you said, they had a tough time of it in Indianapolis, but he's a fairly decent kicker. Goggles. Seen people mention about, you know, Robbie Gould.
No, he's past it. His leg wasn't there.
Yeah, I agree.
That's why they let him go, because they realised anything below, really, to be honest, 45 yards, it was limping just about over the post if you were lucky. So I think even they realised his leg's gone. It's shot.
Yep. Do you think we're going to stick with Havrisik, or do you think come off season we're probably going to look to replace? Question to both of you.
I think again they're going to look come the off season, whether that'll be, like say, free agency who's available, or they may even decide to draft somebody later in the rounds again and, you know, see if they can get someone to stick. You know, it's just difficult, you know. It's a difficult position. There's only so many good kickers in the league, and unfortunately, a lot of them have been signed up, and they're signed up for long-term contracts as well. So, you know, it's highly unlikely, you know, unless one really does slip through the cracks into free agency, it's going to have to be the draft, I think, for us to go. But, you know, the Rams may decide to stick with them and give them, you know, much like they did with Gay, and give them another season and see if he can improve. You just don't know with them.
What about you, Stephen? Do you think we're going to end up sticking with him, or do you think, nah, we'll just replace him?
It's a kicker, so you didn't want to draft a kicker. It's so low in the draft picks, so free agency, see who we get, and just go from there.
Okay, fair enough. One thing I forgot to mention, actually, just on the topic of kicking, different side of kicking, and that's punting. I forgot to mention it in week 11. Ethan Evans got named NFC Special Teams Player of the Week. He was 5 points, 52 yards on average. His longest was 65. We've spoke about him a few times now, Andy. And you know, with Hyltman, you know, this is going back to our draft post draft episode when we looked at his tape. The guy's absolute solid. Do you not think, and question to both of you guys, do you not think they should maybe try and see if he could kick a field goal, given how the leg he's got on him?
I know everyone says that, but it's a different discipline of how you kick the ball. How you kick it as a kicker is completely different from how you kick it as a punter. I think that they have tried this experiment before, and there's very few who can do. They can do it as an emergency cover, but I think there's actually a league rule as well that says you have to have a punter and a kicker to start with. You can't double duty on it for that reason, because otherwise it'd save your cap, you know, it'd save your team space and cap space if you didn't have to get two. But I think there is a rule written somewhere down, as I say, that you have to have both in your starting, you know, 46 for the game.
Just on that, what team was it? Was it the Texans that didn't have an stud kicker? And they had to, I don't know if it was one of the receivers or something. There was a team a couple of weeks back, how did they get around it if the guy's registered as a different position? Or does that case of, you have to actually be, says, well, you could have a wide receiver this week, but you could register as a kicker next week.
Yeah, you've just got to register, but you can't register as both unless it's, you know, if your kicker goes down during a game, then yeah, you can use your punter. We've seen players do that, you know, teams have to do that before because no team carries two punters or two kickers on a team. So if you get injured, you know, we've seen, I think it was Will Lutz last year would have had to double duty in a game because they went down. But, you know, it's very much, you know, a different discipline on how you kick the ball and,
moving on, I said we're saying negative, right? Negative with kicking. Positive before we come on to Kyron Williams. Stephen, I'll ask you about this. Is 2-2 Atwell. Three targets, three receptions, 76 yards. For a guy who's, you know, absolutely tiny, he's small, yep. Atwell's having a pretty decent season, all things considered, isn't it, Stephen?
He's been a great out route and moving the targets and making the space for Bakua. So I think Atwell this year, I think we've had him through three seasons now. Now he's sort of going to his own. He's grown into the position.
Yep, and I think this goes back to what we were saying about like with Cup, the whole situation there. Cup was only, he was five targets, three for 18 yards this week. But I think, as we were talking about just earlier on there, that Stafford's having to read, you know, the options a lot more. And Atwell was, he's thriving and benefiting from that. And, you know, some of these receptions he's having are deep balls, you know. And I think for me, seeing a deep ball flow to a guy that he's, I think, you know, I'm going to have to Google like his actual height, right? Because I'm pretty sure he's the same height.
Yeah, total post out, flying up there, getting the catch. I don't know, what is he, 5 foot eight?
Yeah,
5'8". Same height as me. I'm 5'8". I'm absolutely tiny. Yeah. This guy's a wide receiver in the NFL.
He's 5'8" and 95 kilograms or something. He's just flying.
So I think it's one of the ones that from like the benefit he's really getting this season, he's actually been able to showcase. And I think if you guys agree here, that we're all starting to see what 3 years ago the back office actually seen in Atwell.
Yeah.
Because there's obviously been a lot of questions, Andy, hasn't there, been about why did we draft, you know, a 5'8" wide receiver? You know, he's the height, well, he's not going to weight of a running back, but he's the height of a typical running back.
Yeah, you know, I think McVay is finally realising how to, you know, 2 years too late, like how to actually use him in the offence, you know, and we are seeing a proliferation throughout the league of smaller wide receivers. Who, you know, yeah, if you line him up one-on-one with a, you know, a man coverage defensive back, he might get a little bit bullied out of the game. But if you, like we've been doing, get him in motion, get him moving, so he's already moving pre-snap, you know, the guy can get open. And not only that, he has, you know, for a slender guy like he is, he does feel like, he looks like he's put a bit of weight on this year. He does look like he's finally hit the gym and put a couple of pounds on. And, you know, it's showing he's making contested catches as well. You know, one of them, he had a DB all over him and he, you know, bullied him out of the ball, you know, which for somebody of that size is, you know, quite you know, very rarely seen. So I think he's evolved his game himself. And like I say, McVay, maybe LaFleur coming in has gone, well, actually, if we do this with this guy, you're going to be able to, you know, get the guy wide open. And it, you know, it's clearly shown in a few games when he has been targeted, you know, he is doing well. And you know, I do feel it is something that the offense needs to do more, is to open up a bit more of the deep passing game and allow this guy, you know, to streaks, go routes, deep digs, posts, things like that. Just get the guy flying, you know, and let's get the ball. Stafford's got the arm to, you know, it's not as if he's got a noodle arm and he can't throw more than 20 yards like Brock Purdy or someone like that. You know, the guy can lob it 50, 60 yards. Let the guy let it rip sometimes. You know, because, you know, it'll also keep the box, as we said previously, it keeps the box light then, because if, you know, DBs and linebackers have got to sort of take that extra couple of yards step back because of the threat of Atwell going deep, it frees open the, I think we're seeing it, it does free open the run game because the boxes aren't as heavily stacked with linebackers and safeties.
Yeah. So going on from a little guy to quite, well, it's not even arguably about it, no arguments whatsoever about a big guy who had a big week for us this year. Now, before going any further, 229 passing yards this week, 228 rushing yards. Now, the Cardinals had 292 yards total, and at one point, this guy had more yards than the whole offense of the Cardinals, and that man is the NFC Offensive Player of the Week, Mr. Kyren Williams, who returned back this week, 143 on the ground, 61 yards in the air, 2 receiving touchdowns. Holy, pardon my language, shit. What a performance, guys.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just called it the Kyren Williams Bowl.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
He destroyed them.
Yeah, he did, mate. It was a, you know, perfect. It's sort of, we haven't seen a performance like this since the Gurley days, to be brutally honest. And it was really a nice thing to see, you know. And like I've highlighted about him before, he's probably the least athletic running back in the NFL in terms of his straight line speed. But I think that actually helps because it allows the blocks to develop, which gives them that space. But he also runs at a lot bigger size. You know, he runs like you sort of, you know, you'd expect your traditional power back to run and smash. This guy has, you know, for a light guy, you know, has the low down power to keep going. You know, even
and he plays like a fullback.
Yeah, pretty much. He does play like a full, you know, an old style fullback.
Downhill all the way.
Yeah, but you know, the guy, and I think as well because we have got some, you know, bigger guys up front on the line now. He actually gets lost behind them because they can't see him over the guys, and you know, the guy is just, you know, special this week. And if this can continue, potentially we've got our three down back of the future.
Yes.
Which is interesting you say that, Andy, because at the start of the year, I'm not sure. It's just I remembered you saying that this guy will maybe work in a split back situation, but he's not a running back one. And you know, this guy's just proving everybody, including myself, wrong. It just shows you the weeks we've had him out. Him come straight back in. I know it's the Cardinals, but it doesn't matter. It's the fact that he still could go out week one coming back from an injury and perform like this. That it just shows you how much this guy means to our running game. And like you said, I think when you've got the likes, you know, we've got Steve Avila and Kevin Dotson in the line to highlight them because they're doing really well on the offensive line. These guys are getting the times to kind of like shore up the blocks to open up the channels for Williams to, you know, like you said, he's not the quickest, the most athletic running back, but to actually read, you know, the offensive line, to read the gaps and attack the gaps at his pace.
Yeah, you know, I always thought he had the skills as a running back to run the ball. I'd never seen this receiving side of him. I didn't ever think he'd be a three down back because I was like, I've never seen, even in college, he wasn't particularly utilized in the, you know, the passing game.
Yeah.
So this element of is something that's kind of I've never seen before out of the guy. You know, and I did at the start of the season think it was going to be, like I said, Kyren Williams, Zach Evans backfield. But, you know, if this is what he is going to be for us, then, yeah, let the guy, let him feast, let him go, you know, and let's just hope he can keep himself healthy and keep performing like each week like this.
Yep. Sorry, what were you saying there, Stephen?
I just said feed him the ball.
Yeah.
Let's open up that.
It's, that I think.
Just going, so.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I kind of, maybe quite a few is, are now going to take pleasure in, is that surely this makes it harder for McVay to abandon the running game.
Yeah, he always abandons it too early. I think if we feed, run ball, play action, we win. Simple.
Yeah, it's, as I've said previously, it's how, you know, we run what's called, if you like, the Shanahan style offense.
Yes.
You know, with a McVay element to it. It primarily runs, it's got to be run game first, then the passing game comes, you know, and the play action and the passing game comes afterwards. And it is frustration, but you just know, I don't know, it always feels like McVay, as soon as, well, you know what, we've had a couple of 1 yard runs, that's it, abandon it, I'm going back to just launching the ball.
Exactly.
You know, and I don't think we've had periods where we felt, oh, McVay's finally maybe learning, he's going to change, he's going to evolve, but he always seems to, you know, a game or two later, slips back into that routine of just launch it and,
yeah,
you know, and then forget the run game.
Screen pass, and it's just a person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. The usual lack of ideas to try and actually get some kind of momentum going. Like you said, you mentioned there, Stephen, you know, the patented McVay screen pass, you know, which for me, usually comes in third down when we're like third and 14. We gain maybe 2 yards out of it, and it's just a waste. I know we're talking about Kyren Williams a lot here, right? What, you know, he's defensive player of the week. The other guy I want to kind of give a wee bit of kind of props to here is Royce Freeman. 13 carries, 77 yards, one touchdown. He's definitely cemented himself as basically RB2, hasn't he?
Yeah, without a doubt, you know, again, he's just coming off the street and coming and done that running back two job well, you know, and this is, like I say, you know, you don't pay running backs because you can pick those sorts of guys up on the street for, you know, league vet minimums and, you know, they're easily replaceable guys. You know, I think if you can have a team like us where it appears we've got a star running back in Kyren Williams, so you can ride him for his rookie contract, and then you can just pick up, like you said, a little, you know, cheap free agency guy off the street and just stick him in the backfield, and you know, you can, you know, spell him when he needs a break, you know, and hopefully that'll be something that maybe Zach Evans can turn into if given the chance. I would still like to see Zach Evans given a chance more than he did this week to actually maybe take that running back two position. Because again, he offers us a lot more speed and juice, which is one element I do feel that we do need in the backfield. We need that change of pace back. And unfortunately, Williams and Freeman are both very similar backs.
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to something we kind of talked about. I think it was yourself that mentioned that actually, Andy, a few weeks back. I know you were saying about Evans. We didn't see anything of Kyren Williams, really. We maybe got him the odd snap in games last year, because McVay tends to, his hand's been forced this year because of the amount of rookies we've had to bring in to fill the roster up. But I think it's one of those ones, next year we'll see more of Evans, because McVay prefers to not, especially the running back position, we've seen, you know, like I said with Williams, he tends to not push the rookies so much in their first year.
Yeah, it seems to be a lot of offensive. Yeah, a lot of offensive rookies. You know, I think if it wasn't for Cup's injury, we probably wouldn't have seen Nakua this year either, because he doesn't tend to wide receivers, running backs. He doesn't tend to want to play them. He likes to sit them for a red shirt, if you like, for a year and let them maybe learn the offense, or, you know, he just doesn't trust them. Yeah, as you say, I think his hand this year has been forced because of the injury to Cup and everything else. He's kind of had to sort of, well, you know what, it's them or nothing, so I'm going to have to go with it.
Yeah. It actually makes you wonder about, you know, just saying about Puka, like, imagine if it's, even with Cup's injury, still didn't give him a look in as he normally would. It makes me wonder if Nakua becoming part of the Breakfast Club, as they're called, is what maybe Stafford pushed McVay to say, well, Cup's down, I can work with this guy. And that's where we've seen him coming. Because I think I've seen again, Nakua, even though he's not really putting up many yards, he's still maintaining and breaking rookie records for the Rams as well. Like, he's still, you know, he's only 4 for 27 this week, but he's still, you know, for a rookie, he's still, I think he's still rated the highest wide receiver rookie this season currently, which is quite funny because I think
he's got 70 yards to go to beat the 1,000 yards this year for the first week.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Yeah, it's something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, he's close to being the first guy to break. Like 70 yards to go, something in the next, and he's only a few games to go. So,
that's not been updated. Sorry, stats haven't been updated here. I'm reading the wrong stats. I'm not even going to do that and tell for it. But yeah, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I think he only did something like it was 160 yards at the time he had. So he's on track for breaking that 1,000 yards marker, which for a rookie is absolutely brilliant, especially. You know,
with the amount of games you got left.
Aye, well, that's it. But it makes you wonder, like, if Stafford maybe had a hand in that, because that's where you'd have probably seen the likes of Trammell, Atwell, getting basically all the targets that Nakua got. And the other thing is with Nakua is, like, it's not just a case of the guy can put up the yards, it's some of the catches he can make. You know, we've spoke so highly of this guy this season. We're coming into week 12 has been, and it's one of the ones, if we were to start having the discussion now, in terms of the offense, right, it's basically a toss-up between him and Williams, who's going to be the offensive player of the year for us. You know, and it's that's a discussion for another day, I guess, guys. But, you know, it's two guys that basically we wouldn't have expected the start season to be in said discussion, let's put it that way. So that does that. So yeah, just wrapping up there. Williams also an offensive player of the week here. I don't know if it's been announced yet or whatnot, but I did see that Kobe Turner was in the running for rookie of the week, but I haven't seen if he got it or not yet. I've seen CJ Stroud's nominated again, so I'm guessing it's probably going to go to Stroud.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Wouldn't surprise me. Just one of the things to highlight from this game is, you know, the offensive line. They didn't allow a sack all game, you know, which allowed Stafford that time to, you know, do what he did this week. Obviously, it massively helped the run game as well. So, you know, you've got to give them props, it seems to be. Now we've got the line back healthy again completely.
Yeah,
the first few weeks of the season where we're not giving up sacks, and you know it's allowing the offense to play, and you know we've got free agency. You know we're probably going to have to start having those discussions in a few weeks. But I personally feel number one signing that must be re-signed is Kevin Dotson. I feel he's got to be the number one priority.
That's brilliant.
100%. Yeah, I think that's brought in as a depth player, this guy's, he's in my book, he's a starter.
Yeah, I think, what is it at the moment? He's fourth or fifth ranked guard in the whole of the league. You know, and he's not even started half as, you know, he missed, what, the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season?
I think it was week 5 first game.
Yeah. You know.
He's not been half season, so, yeah. Dodgson's been going.
He's got to be. I'm sorry. If this team lets that guy walk, I'm really going to be mad at the front office. I will absolutely be steaming annoyed. And you may need to put an extra few quid in the square meter, mate, because I might literally go off my lid if we don't sign him.
Basically what you're saying is, Andy, with Dotson and Avia coming in, we've started to turn around the problems we've had in the offensive line. And, you know, you're right in saying that the guy has to be an absolute priority for re-signing come the off-season, because...
if we can't afford it now.
Exactly. There's that. But that aside, performance-wise, the guy's playing well. Considering that prior to the Seattle game, you know, we were on a losing streak, but the guy was still being... Well, if you actually think about it, the guy was being ranked so highly as an offensive guard, despite us being absolute garbage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the guy is still being ranked despite the fact your offense was getting bugger all gone. So, all things considered, like between him and Avia, if we could draft another Steve Avia to add to that offensive line, we're sorted, and as I keep saying, anybody that's going to say, oh, but it was the Cardinals, they're 2-10, you can only beat who's in front of you, right? We could come up, we could say, for example, you could play the Eagles one week, the Eagles could be off their game, and we could be amazing against them, but it's you can only beat what's in front of you. It depends on who you get, organising your schedule, how teams' records end up. So, I mean, teams can be sitting at 2-10. Well, look at the Seahawks. They're ahead of us now, they're now in the rankings. Yeah, we'll beat them twice.
We've got the tie, so.
Uh-huh. But they've got the better record. So, like I said, you beat what's in front of you. So, for our offensive line to perform so well, to basically give no pressure whatsoever to Stafford, to allow him to play his game, that breeds confidence to Stafford. It breeds confidence to the defensive line. And then on the other side of the ball, one last thing I wanted to highlight is I felt that the performance of the defensive backs, whilst they've been, with us being aside, have been pretty poor this year. It helped a lot of their confidences this week, especially the likes of Fuller, I guess Kendrick as well. What do you think about that, guys, just before we move on?
Yeah, I think, it was a much better performance. And I'm wondering if maybe making a few changes, like allowing Trey Tomlinson in, and also Johnny Johnson III coming back and actually, finally starting the game for us, is actually helping, because the guy, especially John Johnson, he used to wear the green dot for us before he left, so he can actually communicate better with the DBs and get them better set up. So, it just feels like that may have helped us because he did get, he was getting starting reps, but we'll give them some credit where credit's due. This week they did do a lot better. Even Derrion Kendrick, as much as we've slammed the guy, he did well this week. And, can he finally turn things around? I don't know, because I think he's physically limited. He's, 4.7 speed in his 40 time. You're not going to hang, unfortunately. And I think it shows with his penalties. But if he can start maybe using his brain a little bit more, then, he could possibly be a third corner for us. If you can have two decent corners, you can ride with him if you've got, a couple of decent corners next to him.
So moving on to what's happening elsewhere this week. Start with you, Stephen. Stephen, did you catch, even Red Zone, did you catch any of the other games this week? I didn't really see anything to tell you the truth, other than just see the score lines.
No, I never watched much. But I just want to say that the Seahawks, if the Seahawks won, Brett Rippon was going to get the game ball. That's the only reason they signed him.
Andy, did you catch any of the games this week, mate?
Yeah, the only one I managed to catch was the Buffalo-Philly game. Wow, that was quite a interesting game, to be honest.
Yeah. On the topic of that, what do you call it again? Basically, I'm going to just mimic it in my thought.
Horse collar.
Horse collar, that's what I'm looking for. The horse collar and Allen.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's like, it's... No wonder people online are going on about the refs are all for the Eagles.
Yeah, it was... How the ref missed it, I do not know when he stood 2 yards away from it.
Yeah.
Penalty aside, I thought, it was a fantastic game to watch as a neutral. But I think Buffalo's season's slowly falling apart and the Eagles at the moment, they look unstoppable. Who's it the Eagles have got this week? I can't remember now.
Yeah, let's just check.
I think they've got the Niners. Another thing, they've got the Niners and the Seahawks coming up.
They've got them. They're playing them.
Yeah, and then I think, haven't they got the Seahawks? Yeah. Something like that. So it's going to be an interesting few games to watch for them, potentially.
They've got the Cowboys the week after.
Oh, that's an interesting game as a neutral to watch because they can be quite spicy.
Yep, seeing the Cowboys won 45-10 against the Commanders. I see the Commanders, who a couple of times I've said have been both games against the Eagles, have pushed them really close.
Mm-hmm.
sort of interesting. I'll tell you one game, like, I didn't see clips of it. I seen basically snippets of people complaining about it. And once again, the Giants are involved. They beat the Patriots 10-7, and it was absolutely
Do you know the ironic thing is the Patriots have now got three primetime games coming up, including Christmas Eve. I'll be falling asleep early Christmas Eve because they'll put me to sleep.
Stephen, predict how many of the three games will be flexed for another game.
Well, the Patriots got to be flexed because they're honking.
Yeah, absolutely honking. They are. I seen Jared Goff was back his usual ways against the Packers.
Yeah, but we need Jared Goff to do his business the next game to help us. Just for the seeds. So we need Jared Goff to help.
Well, because the Saints is one of the teams that we need to kind of know better to get into playoffs, because we're sitting, believe it or not, folks, we're still in a hunt. I don't want to get into playoff chat too much because I don't want to be jinxing us here. In my opinion, let's just see what happens. You know,
I think it's looking like we could get the Rams at the Lions in the wild card game.
Oof.
That could be happening.
That would be
an interesting one.
That would be an interesting game. And
yeah, Stafford back in there. That's a possibility now.
No comment. I'm not going to pass comment.
The way it's going, that could happen.
I never actually thought of it right now, because the Eagles obviously would get the bye, so it'd be 2-7.
Yeah, it would be a 2-7, yeah, potentially.
Because if we're going to get in, we'll be number 7, is the way it's going to be. I mean, considering, like, how if we're still three of the four teams for the NFC West, they'll still get into the playoffs, which is just nuts as well. But I mean, again, it just highlights kind of how poor the NFC elsewhere is becoming. Yes. That, you know, we can have basically a not great season and we can still sneak in, you know. Yeah. But we need results to go our way, you know.
Yeah, I've got a few more difficult games coming up, and you know, we'll see what happens.
I'm trying to think. There was one of the games last week. Our percentage for making the playoffs went from 10% to 40% with the game result. And I can't remember what game it was for the life of me. I'm looking at the results now to try and work out what it was. I don't think it wasn't the Lions Packers game. It might have been the Falcons Saints game. There was one of the games that, because of the result, it basically jumped us up fourfold in the playoffs, and that's why obviously, like, people are now saying, well, we could potentially be a wild card team. And you know, I think we'll see it now, see if that happens and go one and done. I think it's a hell of an achievement for this team to have made the playoffs, considering where the roster was at the start of the year and what we went through to get there. But let's keep an eye on that as we go along. So other things happening this week. The Pro Bowl vote is open. I'll ask you guys individually. Stephen, first, we'll come to you. Do you think anybody on the Rams roster could or will make the Pro Bowl cut? I say Pro Bowl, but it's just a popular vote, really.
I don't know. But Torrey Holt has to get...
Well, we'll come to him. We'll come to that in a second. Yeah, no, you're all right. No, you're right. You're right to bring up. Andy, anybody for your roster you think should make the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, to be honest, obviously AD, I think he's just got to be there. If we, you know, he's got to be part of, you know, basically should have his own permanent fixture in that. Kevin Dotson on the offensive line, I think he's definitely is in that right. Puka, I think, deserves to get in there as a rookie. And Steve Avia as well is another one I feel that, you know, should be in there as well, you know. So there's a few of our team I think should be there or thereabouts, and to be honest, maybe even Stafford could make it as the wild card, you know, QB. If one of them goes, you know, because normally the Super Bowl quarterbacks don't make it, so you know, they normally have a replacement. I could see even Stafford potentially getting get in that position.
What about, do you think Kyron Williams has an outside chance at all? If like the stage you're talking about, you know, the Super Bowl teams, you know, getting in or whatnot.
I don't think so. I don't think he's well known enough outside of the Rams, to be honest. Running back tends to be, you've got the likes of Bijan Robinson and Saquon Barkley, that they're the players who are going to get the votes before Kyron does. I'd be very surprised if Kyron Williams gets a sniff at it, to be honest. But I do feel, like I say, Dotson, you know, Aaron Donald, Steve Avia are the three that would definitely, I feel, should be, you know, should just be straight in without any questions asked. And, you know, potentially even Byron Young as well, you know, because of what he's done as a rookie.
Yep. And just, Stephen jumped the gun on that, but it was what we were going to talk about anyway. I'm repping the man himself tonight because once again, Tony Holt has made the cut for the semi-final of the Hall of Fame class. Now, it's a no-brainer that Tony Holt should be in the Hall of Fame, guys. What do you think the chances are of him actually getting there this year?
He has to get there this year for the greatest run tough. He's the last person to get there, so it's a no-brainer. He must get voted in at last.
It feels like it, but every year we say the same thing. It's a no-brainer, and every year he just I don't know. Does his face? It feels like almost at this point, does his face not fit with the league or with whoever's voting? Did he upset someone in the past?
That is strange. He's got to get in there.
Yeah. Just what I read this tweet out, guys. Right, and this is from Jake Ellenbogen, who tweeted this out on his own Twitter account. Right, and I'm just going to read this out. Bear in mind, names I'm going to mention here are Hall of Famers. More yards per target than Terrell Owens, Reggie Wayne, Steve Smith, Marvin Harrison, and Andre Johnson. More yards per game than everyone except Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, Tyreek Hill. More receptions per game than Jerry Rice, Reggie Wayne, Steve Smith, and Terrell Owens. More touchdowns per game than Julio Jones, Reggie Wayne, Steve Smith, and Andre Johnson. Tied with Randy Moss and Julio Jones for second most 1,300-yard season, only behind Jerry Rice. Led the NFL in receiving yards during 11 years he was in the league. Why the fuck is this man not a Hall of Famer when there's other receivers and other players that are getting in ahead of him? The man puts up the stats. He's had the career, with the exception of one season, was with one team. And somebody said, oh, but he's played with Kurt Warner. Like, most of his career, he had 50 games with Warner. He actually played with Mark Bulger more.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Need to say anymore.
Tough and strange.
Like I say,
I'm trying to find the tweet quickly because I've seen a tweet and actually broke down like all his games. And some of the other quarterbacks that Tory Holt played with are absolute, they're awful, basically. Yeah. And this guy is still putting up the numbers.
But, you know, like I said, it does feel almost at this point as if he's upset someone in the past and they just like, no, he ain't getting in because of that reason. That's the only reason you can think of why he's not in there otherwise.
Well, he's been a semi-finalist 9 times now.
Exactly. Yeah. He should have been the first time he should have got in, yet alone.
Yeah.
9 times. You know, it just doesn't, like I say, it just doesn't make sense for the guy. And I just feel like they've just got it out for him.
Just looking at the list of the guys that are semi-finalists now. Bear in mind, I read that tweet out. So, Andre Johnson, Reggie Wayne, Anquan Boldin, Devin Hester, I guess, he's a kind of more a kick returner, I guess. Steve Smith Sr. So, that's other wide receiver. And Hines Ward as well. That's other... Hines Ward's in his one as well. But that's other wide receivers who are semi-finalists here. You've got... And it's like... some of these guys, you know, are great receivers, but like you said, he must have upset someone in the past because on paper, on film, this guy is a goddamn Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And it's an absolute travesty that he's now going 9 times and fingers crossed it's not a 10th. Probably it's going to be a 10th because you know the way this goes, that he's just no one. Like, I've seen London Fletcher, ex-Ram as well. He's up for it as well. This is his first time as a semi-finalist, but it makes you wonder what Tory has got to do to actually get in. Because, I mean, he's the number, his career speaks volume for his the type of wide receiver he was.
And like you said, brilliant. And part of the greatest show on Turf, couldn't he make it? I don't know what's going on.
I know, and like you said, Stephen, he's the last one waiting to get in.
That you know, squad.
And it's, you know, and it's like, well, the background there behind, you know, referees is the greatest show on Turf, and Tory is the man on the, well, no, it's that way, on the far left there. Do you know what I mean? He's the last one that needs to get in, he deserves to get in.
He deserves and it.
We all want to get in, because Tory Holt was one. So I'm just going back, because it was the season we became, like, without a doubt, the greatest show of Turf when the Rams first came to my attention. You know, like yourself, Stephen, I'm kind of going back to Channel 4 days of, you know, like, American football. Like, I used to be sitting in my high chair, going 4-4-4, 4-4-4, calling audibles in my high chair. I always grew up watching NFL, and it was seeing the Rams being on like Sky Sports and seeing them like, this team are really good to watch. It was the greatest show on Turf that got me hooked. And Tory Holt, Isaac Bruce, and Marshall Faulk on our offense was one of the things that really like got me hooked. And for me, like, that's why I'm repping the man tonight on the podcast. And like, my favorite Rams jerseys are greatest show on Turf players. And like, I just really badly want to see the guy in. You know,
other guys you named there, Tory Holt must get there.
They're good. The other guys are good receivers in their own right, but compared to Holt's career, they're not. Some of them will get in the Hall of Fame, but they shouldn't be getting in ahead of him.
No, without a doubt, you know, he should have been the first one out of all.
Yep. I think I said another rant. Back in 12 months' time, guys, they probably rant again about this.
Probably, but yeah. We'll put a pin in this.
That's his last chance.
If we're back here in 12 months still talking about this, there'll be a lot more foreign words in the rant about it, and there'll be, you know, people will be taking names and that. But moving on, guys, week 13, we are back in LA for the visit of the Cleveland Browns. We are 4-1 in our last five against them. How are we feeling about this one? Stephen, let's start with you, mate.
I think we've got a good chance. This need Sean Watson quarterback. We've got DTR and Joe Flacco as sub QB. So it's a tricky one, but I think we should maybe win this. We need to win this, basically, to keep the progress going.
Yep. I'm just want to check. Andy, how are you feeling about this one, mate? Just whilst I'm trying to get the Browns injury report up.
Yeah, fairly confident that our defence can keep these guys reasonably quiet with either DTR, Flacco, whoever the quarterback may be, you know, going. Obviously, you know, they do have probably one of the top three defences in the entire league. Obviously, if Myles Garrett is out injured, that's a massive bonus for us. But otherwise, this could be one of them games where whichever defense plays the best is going to win the game, basically. It just feels like one of them games, because I do feel that Stafford will be under a lot more pressure if Garrett's playing.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's gonna be annoying the hell out of Havenstein all afternoon. And, you know, once Stafford starts taking a couple of knocks, things start, as we've seen time and time again, things fall apart because he starts to feel the injuries and the knocks.
Yeah.
You know, and that they do have. I think we're not going to see, I'd be very surprised if we have another Kyren Williams game like we did last week, this week, because they are a much better run defense, and I think they can shut the run down a lot easier. So it'll be interesting to see what we scheme up to try and help get that going.
Yep. So I've got the injury report up. First of all, just start with us. Havenstein's not injury related. He rested yesterday. The Thursday report's not up yet at the time of recording, guys. Lionel Murchison didn't practice with a knee. Quentin Lake, hamstring. Michael Hoyt, because I can pronounce his name correctly now. He was late practiced after knee injury. It's chronic, like full practice with Hip Cup, despite his ankle injury he's got, is full practice. But switching over to the Browns, DTR isn't going to play this week, basically. Got concussion. So I think we're going to be seeing Flacco starting the quarterback for them. I can't see DTR coming out of protocol in time for that. But Miles Garrett is down as not injury-related, rest for his shoulder. And if you didn't see it, folks, he left. He basically left the stadium with his arm in a sling last week, giving us all hope that he isn't going to play this week. But despite being there, didn't practice yesterday, he's been listed as not injury-related. So I would expect he's probably going to feature, which isn't really what we want. But then again,
let's be honest, even a one-armed Miles Garrett is still quite a dominating force that I don't fancy he's going up against.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The guy is probably top two, maybe even the best pure edge rusher in the league.
Yeah,
you know, and I just don't, you know, he's going to be in Stafford's hip all afternoon, I think. But you know, like I say, I do feel whichever defense can play the best is going to win this game, and hopefully that's ours. You say if you get beat by Joe Flacco, a team that's led by Joe Flacco, it's kind of an embarrassment level.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's at that level of getting beat by the likes of Zach Wilson. Being horrible.
Whoa.
It's a fair comparison to me, but it's probably worse than Zach Wilson, because at least Zach Wilson, you know, has been playing and has been on an active roster all season, whereas Flacco's been, you know, on his couch. So it would be quite embarrassing to lose to a guy who's basically been on the couch to play. But you said it, and I cringed at it, because I'm like, the thought of their defense having to win us this game terrifies me. Because whilst it was a great performance last week, is it enough of a confidence booster for them to step up to win us the game? But I suppose that's what it comes down to, having, you know, a veteran quarterback that's just came off the couch, have been forced to start the game because the rookie quarterback's now got concussion, and obviously Watson's out as well. I think who from the offense, right? Stafford aside, right? Because it's a no brainer that you need your quarterback to step up, right? So I'll ask you first, Stephen, then I'll come to you, Andy. Who from the offense do you think needs to be the man to step up to, you know, get the points on the board?
Kieran Williams. You just need to run the game.
But as Andy said, their defense is a lot better than what Arizona's is. So if we can't basically find a gap, like, is this going to be another game then where we're going to go 1-2 yards, abandon the run, and then there's no hope?
No.
Or do you think there's someone from the receiving core that will be able to step up? I mean, I'm not really clued up on what the Browns' defensive backs are like, to say whether or not we can, you know, deep ball it or not, and like absolutely terrorise them or not.
Not really, no. The starting, if you like, four is Denzel Ward, Grant Delpit, Juan Thornhill, and Greg Newsome, who are all, you know, top DBs in the league. You know, the Browns are very much, they've built their defense from the front back. Personally, for me, I do feel this is maybe a Tutu Atwell or Puka Nacua takeover game if we do have to get to the point. But, you know, I'm just looking at their offense. Outside of Amari Cooper, who's apparently questionable to start at the moment, they don't really have anybody else. Elijah Moore, Cedric Tillman, Marquise Goodwin, somebody called David Bell, James Prochet. You know, they've got a wide receiver one and then basically a bunch of scabs and that's it. You know, so again, it's not much, you know, if we can stop their run game and keep them quiet, The other quarterback the Browns have got, by the way, who might start is XFL legend PJ Walker. Because he's on the roster as well. So he might actually start before Flacco.
Well, I mean, it's good for the XFL, I guess, that one of the guys can be thrusted into the limelight like that. But
yeah, he's had a couple of games for them this season with with the I can't say it, but the other quarterback, weird situation where he's in a game, on a game, gone a game, can't be bothered to do a game, but still gets paid 250 odd million for doing nothing.
You know, oh, right, the guy likes to frequent massage parlors. So what you're saying, Andy, right, is on offense. I suppose this is where I get the point you're making now about our defense being maybe key to helping us win the game. Is that it's because their offense isn't great in general? What we really need is we need pick sixes from the likes of Darian Kendrick. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, basically, you know, we need them, you know, to step up. You know, their offensive line's battered. They've got Jedrick Wills is on IR, Jack Conklin's on IR. You know, they're losing a lot of players through injuries, much like we were last year. You know, they're very much like we were last year. And, you know, if our defense can step up and make some plays, I think our offense can do just enough to win us the game. You know, I could see this maybe being one score game, maybe a field goal win, whoever gets, you know, or one touchdown win. But, you know, I am confident that we can do enough to shut them down and get the win, you know. But I think it is going to be a tough, grindy game.
Take one thing. So we'll just kind of wrap this up with predictions. So, Andy, yes or no? Will we win the game?
Yep. W.
Okay, Stephen.
21-14. I'm going with.
Oof. How about yourself, Stephen?
Yeah. It's going to be a tight game, so I'll go with the same 21-14.
What about you, John?
Before we had this discussion, I maybe felt a bit differently, but with you breaking down what their offense is like, I have to say that the game is definitely winnable. I think we'll win it. I'm going to go 24-20.
Okay.
I'll go with that. And so that was that. And then reluctantly moving on to fantasy football.
What's fantasy football? I've never heard of that before.
No, I don't know what that is either, mate. So
is that a thing that some people seem to be able to win at and other people just completely suck massively?
I mean, I don't know, Andy. Well, before we go on, Stephen, are you playing fantasy football yourself this year?
No, not this year.
Lucky you. Right answer.
Best option.
It's your best option. Like, don't be like us. Don't be mugs like us that think we know something about football and then realise, no, we don't. Bugger all.
No, I do know about football. Unfortunately, I know about all the players who are injured because that's all I ever seem to draft is injured players.
The fantasy football torture lingers on for Andy and I, folks. So let's see how people are getting on this week. So we'll start off with the McVay conference. Where's the leagues? Where are they? League, right. We're a couple of weeks away from playoff season, folks. It's the last 2 weeks of the regular season. Before we hit the playoffs, so let's check the standings. The Cooper Cup division, DJ Wright still leading the way on 9-3, followed by West Ham UFC Matt, and then Lewis Petzer, 6-6, Santi Simmons, Chelsea, and Acombs are both from 5-7. In the Aaron Donald division, oh, Jesus Christ, Andy, mate, it's bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bad.
Oh, mate. My God, man, I thought I was bad. Sorry, mate.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Stormbusters lean the way on 8-4. T.W. Adam and Dave John are both 6-6. Cecil Rams on 5-7, and Andy is 2-10. Oh, mate. So, give you an idea of how the playoff picture is currently looking at. Stormbuster and DG Wright will see byes. It'll take them into the semi-finals in week 16. So, at the moment, Lewis Petzl will take DW Adam on and Dave John, West Ham, UFC. There is a consolation bracket, Andy, if you're interested in that. But based on current predictions, mate, not going to go that well for you that week either, mates. And I'm not saying that trying to be smug him because I'm now switching to the Vermeule Conference, which I feature in. So let's see how that's going, folks. The Isaac Bruce Division, Nick Fousen, 1-8-4, Harold Hawson's and Lewis MUFC 99 are both 7-5. Kevin M 348, he's 6-6, and myself bringing up the rear with the lowest scoring points in the league on 4-8. Over to the Marshall Falk Division. OBJ is still missing that ACL, folks. He's 8-4. Mission Ingolfable 7-5. T-Boy 6-6. Artful Aaron is 4-8. And Chris McLaughlin, G-Glog, is 3-9. So looking at how the playoffs are shaping up there. Nick 1001 and OBJ is missing ACL. We'll see byes. Lewis MUFC 99 will take on Mission and Golfball currently, and Kevin M348 will take on Harold Horseman. And then it seems to be it's almost an, it's based on the consolation bracket. And it's like, Andy, I should have put you in this division because it would have been the LA Rams UK team going for the consolation bracket. Yeah. T-Boy will take on Chris, and I'll take on Aaron. And at present, and like I said, Andy, I wasn't being smug about it because as it goes at the moment, I will finish dead last in the Vermeule Conference. So it's not looking good for Evie's, mate. But
no,
I suppose to you guys it's going well for, you know, he's not doing great. But yeah, so it's two more weeks of the regular season to go, folks, and then it's playoff time. So good luck to everybody in the fantasy football this week. I'm already predicted to lose again, so I'm just past the point of caring. Now it doesn't matter what I do.
I don't even look anymore.
Do you know what the annoying thing for me, Andy, is? I've got Mahomes I've got Mahomes and CJ Stroud, my quarterbacks. I'm actually dropping Mahomes to the bench now, despite the fact he's projected to get more points than CJ Stroud, purely because CJ Stroud is exceeding all his projections and I'm still fucking losing. So yeah. Just like yourself, Andy, like, might know something about football, but when it comes to fantasy football, we're just drafting all the wrong players.
Yeah, it's for me, it's been the year of drafting anybody with an on injury report. It seems to be I'll draft them and then a week later they go on injury for the year. Let's be honest, I had Aaron Rodgers as my quarterback and I was like, yeah, okay. And then what, four plays in and the guy gets crocked and I'm like, thanks very much.
He's back next week.
Well, I
was going to discuss that. His 21-day window has now been opened.
That's nuts. I mean...
He's got to be back in 21. He's got 21 days to get back.
Yeah.
So I don't see the point, though. It's not as if this season's savable. I don't feel anymore.
No.
I mean,
no, it's not. The Jets are out here, really, aren't they? They're not even in a hunch.
4-7, so. I suppose, a bit like us, they could possibly just sneak in if they got.
Just check,
but I just don't see it.
No, couple of superhero.
They need results to go their own way because, like, when you're looking at the AFC North, the Ravens 9-3, Steelers and Browns are both 7-4. Dolphins are 8-3. The Bills, you know, they're still. I mean, while you're saying, Andy, like, their season's kind of maybe turning for the worst, they're still 6-6 because the Jets are back behind them in 4-7. Like, they would really need results to go their way. It's not. I don't think the Jets' position is in any way similar to ours, where there's hope that we could sneak in.
Yeah.
Even in the South, the Colts and the Texans are both 6-5 as well. So.
Yeah, like I say, I think they could. Results would have to go their way, but, you know, maybe that's what they're feeling, that results could go their way and they could sneak in. The only reason I can see why they're letting them come back.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd just be like, yeah. You finish for the year, go away. We'll come back next year. Maybe he's coming back to then announce he's retiring straight away.
Maybe, but I was going to say, let's be real. he's wanting to come back so he can say that some fucking hallucinogenic that he's taken is the real reason that healed up his Achilles, and that's why he's back, because of this wonder drug, you know.
He's came back pretty quick. Came back quick.
But I don't know. Who knows, man? I don't see the point in bringing back. But before we wrap up, guys, anything else you want to bring up, discuss before we finish up for this evening?
No, I don't think so, mate. I think it's just a case now of let's move on to next week and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Yep. So
to do us a favour, and we might escape a playoff place.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope Goff and Co can turn their season around and get going, and we can win our game and, you know, playoff, a surprising playoff berth is still in, you know, the picture, which didn't feel like a few, you know, 2 weeks ago. It felt like playoffs were over and done with, and we're competing for a top five pick, and now all of a sudden the playoff talk is back in again, and, you know, maybe that's a discussion for another day. Are we better to get the playoffs, or would we be better off to have tanked for a good draft pick.
Aye. That is definitely a discussion for another day. Yeah. I think, guys, there, because just like you said, it's just crazy how the NFL scripts goes, because, you know, folks, this is all scripted. This is all fake. It's all predetermined.
Let's hope we're scripted to win the Super Bowl again this year.
That's it. So, like, someone up there knows how this is going to go. So,
Here's the script, John. Rams and the Texans make the Super Bowl.
Brilliant.
It's got you thinking.
Yeah.
Hello.
Places.
I'm not discussion for another day, because I could go really long on this, because, you know, the year that we won the Super Bowl, we weren't even in the discussion for it. You know, who knows, but talk for another day, guys. But, yep, folks, that's us for another episode of the podcast. So we wrap up, just to remind you folks that you can catch us every week or every other week live on YouTube. Now we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter live as well. So every episode will be streamed live to all three platforms. But in addition to that, shortly after the podcast, you'll be able to catch us on the usual audio channels, Spotify, iTunes, you know, yada yada, all of them. So catch us there. Don't forget to give us a like and subscribe, please, on Twitter. You can also buy us a coffee, help support the podcast, and help us out with it. And at the end of the season, we may be doing a little wee giveaway for you guys. Obviously, the guys in the fantasy football, they already know, because they've agreed to it when they signed up, that there'll maybe a wee prize for them, which I've already started researching for you guys. But yeah, you can buy us a coffee and help support what we do here in the LA Rams UK podcast. Also, if you're not on it, reach out and get involved in our Discord server and join us for Rams chat, game day chat, game meetups, or if you're having any dad issues, because we've even got our Rams family centre, which is quite quiet this year, I must admit, so everyone must be getting on quite well. So get involved in that if you want, folks. But apart from that, Andy, always a pleasure to talk to you, mate.
Yep, always a pleasure, mate, and see you next week for hopefully another W.
And Stephen, just want to say thank you so much for joining us, mate. I hope you enjoyed this evening and hope to get you back on again.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Okay. And that was us, folks. And I'm John. And we will catch you guys next week to hopefully discuss a win over the Cleveland Browns. Thanks, guys. And catch us all next week.